Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and every Friday at 7 o'clock on Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. and also on IPMNation.com Saturday mornings at 8 a.m., although they do change it around, and that's based out of Concord, New Hampshire, and Podomatic.com. Just if you want some archive of this show, just go to Podomatic.com and put in Camp Constitution. You can also find us on YouTube. Camp Constitution has a YouTube channel, and we're getting about 14,000 views a day, so thanks to all of you who listen to the show and might be going to our channel and subscribing. We appreciate it. And the show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp is in the beautiful Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts, August 5th to the 11th. And if you want to learn more about it, you visit our website, campconstitution.net. Now, we have our special guest on the line, and that would be Alex Newman, who's no stranger to our show. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, good. I want to thank you for coming on at relatively short notice. Alex is a writer. He writes for the New American Magazine, World Net Daily, and a number of others. Yeah, I think you have your own media arm as well, correct?
Yes, I have a consulting firm, and I do some media work through that as well.
And you're the co-author of Crimes of the Educators, and I think there's another book you co-authored as well.
Yeah, there's a few. The most recent one is Marxist Mole in the White House, Comrade Obama Unmasked. I wrote that with Trevor Loudon and Cliff Kincaid and Joel Gilbert and a number of other investigative reporters.
Oh, wow. That's a good company. Anyway,
yeah.
I want to talk to you about a recent article you had in the New American on what's happening in South Africa to the white farmers. So back in the, pretty much the whole world, the West, with its self-loathing attitude, all embraced this Marxist communist terrorist by the name of Nelson Mandela, including the United States. And I remember him coming here in 1990. I think it was in the spring. And I was involved with helping to sponsor a speaking tour of a man by the name of Tom Sanquilinda. He was a member of the Xhosa tribe, the same one that Mandela belongs to, although he realized Mandela was nothing more than the leader of a communist terrorist organization. And in fact, this poor man had his house burned down to the ground by these terrorists and his business burned down to the ground. And this man was very much against apartheid, but he was also in favor of pro-Western Christian type leadership and not the terrorist, atheist, Marxist, Soviet-sponsored and Cuban-sponsored that Mandela was involved in. He ended up taking power in the early 90s, and I think most of us who were observing the situation thought that this would have happened much sooner, that the genocide of getting rid of the white farmers, much what they did in Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, would have taken place. So give us an update on pretty much what you wrote about in the article and what's happening there in South Africa.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. Everything you said is spot on. I'm sure there's some listeners out there who've been indoctrinated in the Marxist training center, public schools. Oh, my goodness, how can you say that about Nelson Mandela? Well, St. Nelson, yeah, exactly. Well, the facts about him are absolutely clear, and every single word he said is exactly right. In fact, we now know he was on the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party, which was, of course, just a tentacle of the mass-murdering regime enslaving the Soviet Union.
Interesting, Alex? He didn't hide it. You could go to Google right now and put down a picture of Nelson Mandela, communist connections, and you'll see pictures of him with the clenched fist, Joe Slovo, the late head of the Communist Party. He wasn't trying to hide his communist affiliation, his love of Fidel Castro. It was the Western journalists and politicians that were trying to hide it.
That's exactly right. And the CFR and the David Rockefellers of the world did everything possible to paint him as some sort of freedom fighter when, of course, he was actually a terrorist and a communist. He actually ran the terrorist division of the ANC, which is a front group for the South African Communist Party. This terrorist group was called MK or the
Initials of it. Yeah, Spirit of the Nation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Spirit of the Nation is how it translates into English. And our government had the good sense, you know, for once, and that rarely happens, but to put Nelson Mandela on the U.S. list of terrorists. And so he was on that list until 2008, 5 years before he passed away. That's because he was a terrorist. I mean, this guy was arrested at a farm that had thousands of landmines and grenades. I mean, these people were murdering women and children, bombing shopping malls, bombing churches, slaughtering people going into church. I mean, it was just absolutely barbaric, and the Western media hid it from anyone. So to get back to your question, Hal, and update, and you're right, a lot of people did think this was going to happen sooner, but the South African communists actually laid out a very detailed strategy. This revolution was supposed to have two phases. So phase one was convince the Afrikaners to surrender political power by sounding moderates and having the whole world turn against them. And so phase one happened, and that was supposed to be the quote-unquote democracy phase. And now we're in phase two. In fact, they openly announced phase two a couple years ago. I think the New American Magazine may have been the only American media outlet to report on this, which is, you know, a sad testament to the state of our media. But so now they're in phase two, and phase two is the more vicious stage. You know, and the communist theorists have always understood that, you know, the communist revolution will work differently in every country. And, of course, it had to work differently in South Africa. South Africa was not, a backwater peasant country. In fact, it was a highly advanced industrialized nation with nuclear power. And I mean, some amazing developments came out of it. The very first heart transplant came from a South African hospital, an Afrikaner doctor. So this was a very advanced nation. And so it took time. You know, it's kind of like the United States. You couldn't just one day wake up and have a communist revolution and, pull a Soviet Union or what Mao did in China. It took time. So now they're in phase two, which is basically start stealing everything, drop the mask, and exterminate anyone who opposes them. And it so happens that, you know, the Western-minded Christian Afrikaner people stand in the way of this communist revolution. And so they have a big target on their back. So does everyone else who opposes this regime. And what we're seeing now is horror beyond horror. I mean, the attacks on these farmers are so horrifying, you can't even put it into words. I mean, you know, they rape babies with broken bottles. They rape women in front of their husband for hours on end and torture them with electric drills. They drill holes in them, and they use irons to burn them for hours. They gouge out their eyes. I mean, it's so horrific, you can't even imagine. And then they leave the dead bodies, and they write stuff in blood on the walls, and they rip out pages from the Bible and put it on the
dead
body. It makes
Charles Manson look like a Sunday school teacher. It really does.
I mean, it's satanic. It's so evil what they're doing. And then the government comes along and says, oh, that was just a robbery, thinking that, you know, the world is retarded, essentially. And, that's what we're seeing now, and it's going to get a lot worse. And I just put out an article yesterday. There's basically the last hope for these people is to secede and declare independence and claim self-determination. And there's different ideas about what that should look like and how it should happen. But these people are now in a fight for their lives. I mean, that's how serious it is. They are on the verge of being exterminated. The world's leading expert on genocide, Gregory Stanton, actually went down there in 2012 and pointed this out. He said, there is a looming genocide. It's targeting the white farmers, the Afrikaner people. And, if something doesn't change, and he also said, of course, the government has direct links to this. And that was back when the president was openly singing songs advocating the genocide of the Afrikaners. They bring me my machine gun. We're going to go shoot all the Boers. The Boers are, of course, the Afrikaner farmers.
Right, yeah. B-O-E-R-S.
And it's tragic. It's tragic. And that's what's going to happen if, something doesn't change. They've already now announced that they're going to expropriate the farms without compensation. And anybody who resists is going to be dealt with. And so now these people are in a situation. Do they flee the country? Where do they go? Nobody will take them, right? The United States won't take them. Europe won't take them. Australia started making noises about taking them. And then the South African government said, oh, you guys are just racist. And so they're in quite a pickle right now.
What was interesting is the point I was going to make, that first off, the world – we knew this was going to happen. Anybody who understands how the communist revolutionaries work. And I know that Rhodesia had a relatively small white population in comparison to the, which is now Zimbabwe. And I mean, less than what, about a half, even less than a half a million. But South Africa has a much larger white population between the English native born English from whose trace ancestor to England. And they're the more liberal. They're the more liberals. They're the ones that collaborated with the ANC to kind of make this happen because of their contempt for the Boers. Because they, England, the Boers were down there. The Dutch went down there, settled there. And then the British came down and they kind of conquered. And the Boers established what the Orange Free State and the Transvaal. And
yep.
Then they found diamonds in the Transvaal. It's all of a sudden, well, we got to get those diamonds. So the British, the first concentration camps in the world, as far as I know, were set up in South Africa by the British to subjugate the Afrikaners, the Boers, the Dutch.
That's right.
Of Dutch descent.
They put the women and children in there because the men were doing the fighting. So they literally rounded up their women and children. 30,000 of them died in these concentration camps. This was long before Nazi Germany made use of the same thing. I'm really impressed, Hal. There's very few people outside of South Africa who know their history as well as you do on this topic.
Oh yeah, well I've been following it, and you learn a lot. I've read a number of books, and I have some folks I know from South Africa. In fact, there was a Reverend Slimp that was on a speaking tour back in the late 80s. He was a good old Southern Baptist boy, but he spent a lot of time there. There's a man by the name of Don McIlvaney. Do you know that name?
I do, yeah. He does the Intelligencer.
Yes, and Don did a lot of work down there, and he came up with he was down there giving speeches, and he showed on his, he did a video, which is, you can find it on YouTube too, South Africa Aflame, and but he showed how the necklacing, the South African communists, a necklace is a nice piece of jewelry, but that's not what they call it in South Africa. It's a tire, and they put the tire over the victim. Their hands are bound, and they'll put gasoline on the tire and on the body, and it's a very slow, agonizing torture. You're burnt to death, but it's relatively slow. And as they're burning to death, they're beating them. I mean, bad enough you're dying, you're being, they beat them as they're dying, as they're burning. They'll whack them with things, and it's horrible. Then they'll dance around what's left of their body. And this is these are videos that you can see. It's not something that some kind of imagination, some kind of Hollywood movie. It's real.
Oh, Nelson Mandela's wife was involved with this very deeply. Winnie Mandela. Some of this information came out in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission after the whites voted to surrender political power there. And she was involved in many murders, including murders of children. Stompy, one of the, I think he was 12 or 13 years old, murdered by Winnie Mandela.
Her so-called soccer team, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
And she
was caught. Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was mostly blacks, in fact, blacks who opposed the ANC and the communist agenda. In fact, they slaughtered thousands of black people to try to keep the blacks in line as they underwent this communist revolution. I mean, it's just so barbaric. It's hard to even conceive of humans doing that to other humans. But that's communist for you right there. They just act like absolute savages with no soul. And and we see their handiwork all over the world. China, 100 million dead people.
Russia, that's right.
50 million dead people. Everywhere these people go, a trail of death and horror and destruction and starvation follows them. And the Western media continues to cover up all these atrocities. I would say they're complicit in it all.
When I know when Mandela died a few years ago, you thought that he was the fourth part of the they added another part of the Trinity to make it a four part.
Right. Yeah.
It was amazing, the propaganda. And I remember when he came to the United States, he came to Boston. We had our friend Mr. Linda. He stayed. We didn't dare put him in a hotel because he had death threats. The ANC said, "We're going to kill you." And he stayed at my home. I remember we had bodyguards. I had a guy from the Jewish Defense League, a couple of friends, and we had a car in front and a car in back. And he stayed. I had a rifle right in my bed, And it was kind of very interesting. We didn't have any trouble, but of course, most bullies realize when the other side has guns, and they're going to fire at you, they'll stand off. I called the FBI's office in Boston, and they said, "Yeah, there's nothing." I said, "I have a man from South Africa. He's got a death threat against him. He said, yeah, but there's nothing we can do about it. I said, all right. I didn't think you could do anything about it, you know, but I just thought I'd call just to see if there's any, you know, if we could do anything, you know. So, and this poor fellow, I don't know whatever happened to him. He went back to South Africa. He came here on two speaking tours. We had him twice, and I don't know what's happened. We haven't heard from him, so I don't know what happened to him. But let me ask you, do you know the situation with the Zulu tribe? I know the Zulus and the Khoisas pretty much hate each other. Is that the case now? Are the Zulus somehow, have they been neutralized, or are they a force to be reckoned with when it comes to the communists in South Africa?
Well, you know, they have largely been co-opted, and you know, that's one of the things a lot of people don't understand about South Africa. They think it's just, you know, black people and a white minority that dominated the black people. So I mean, they really have the fundamentals wrong. South Africa is not a nation in and of itself. It is actually a combination, a forced marriage, if you will, of many different nations. The Zulu, of course, being one of the more prominent ones, and the Xhosas being another one of the very prominent ones with a lot of numbers. You know, for a long time, the Zulus were very, very opposed to the ANC and the Communist Revolution. In fact, the ANC were, you know, picking them off with guns and trying to shoot them and kill them. But little by little, they've kind of been co-opted and brought in. So, you know, the patronage system, they've tried to get a bunch of the Zulu leaders on the payroll and on the take. And in fact, Jacob Zuma, who was until very recently the president, he's now been replaced by Ramaphosa, another racist communist. But Zuma was actually a Zulu, and his wife was a Zulu. And so they've managed to bring them into the kind of system by saying, hey, you know, you join with us, and we'll give you lots of benefits. You'll have government power. You'll be able to loot the the public. And all you have to do in exchange is just quit opposing us. Right. So it's horrifying, but unfortunately, the Zulus have really been neutralized as a as an opposing force to this revolution, and that's very sad because you know they're going to suffer just as much as everybody else under this regime.
Well, you know, it's interesting that South Africa was only at the we're going back many hundreds of years. The only people there were the folks known as the Bushmen.
Right.
And the Zulus, they're the ones that have that funny, when they talk, they make that funny sound, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And when the Zulus traveled, they actually migrated into South Africa, and then they pretty much exterminated most of the Bushmen. They weren't, they did a number on them. And the Zulus did a number on themselves before they embraced Christianity. They were quite barbaric. There's a couple of movies. I mean, not that I put a whole lot of stock in a Hollywood movie. I think Shaka Zulu and of course, the great movie Rorke's Drift, the Battle of Rorke's Drift, in, which was the movie was Zulu. But they would indiscriminately kill people, and they would have they would commit genocide. Was a common occurrence. And then the tribes were basically very hostile to each other. And when the whites came in, I'm not defending apartheid one bit, but they were able to sort of keep them apart from killing each other. I've heard where, if you were a Zulu patient in a hospital and your nurse was a Khoisa, there's a good chance that they'd snuff you out in the middle of the night, never mind give you your medication and make sure your bedpan's empty. They'd try to kill you. That's how bad it was. And the average person, in the West, has no idea. They think every single black person in sub-Saharan Africa is totally united, and that's not the case.
That's right. And in fact, there's a lot of misconceptions about apartheid, too. Nobody's going to say apartheid was nice. In fact, there was a lot of really horrifying things that happened under apartheid. They classified everybody by their race. They would literally split families apart. This one looks more like this type of person. This type of person.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So they had all this crazy system of racial classification that actually, ironically, was first introduced by the British. And nobody likes to talk about that.
Right.
They'd rather blame the Afrikaners. But the system was not all that different from the idea of reservations that we had here in the United States. People think, they should have just had a democracy, right? Well, there's a lot to this, right? I mean, when it started out, you're right, there was not a lot of black people in South Africa. The Khoisan were there, the Bushmen, the nomadic tribes people. They got along pretty well with the Europeans. They were very, sparsely inhabiting that region of the world. And the European descent South African settlers didn't actually meet the black Bantu people for a long, long time after they started settling in the Cape. I mean, hundreds of years later,
they started settling
inward.
about the same time the Plymouth Plantation was settled, 1620s, 1630s. In fact, the bird arrived down there
in 1652. Yep.
Yeah, I actually heard that the Mayflower was used, and I don't know if that's a true fact or not. Sometimes you hear things, but I don't know if you've heard that or not. But they say the Mayflower, the actual ship, was used. Yeah. So again, the history, a lot of the history, and then the British control. The British end up dominating after the Boer War, which, as we said earlier, was kind of a brutal subjugation, and they met the Boers teach their children. English was the official language, and I gotta meet this guy. So, in your article, which you can find in the New American, we found out you mentioned, was it Australia that offered to take them in?
Yes. Well, the Home Affairs Minister, pointed out the obvious that, the Afrikaner farmers are in serious trouble. They're being slaughtered. They're being tortured. The government is openly inciting hatred and genocide against them. Now the government has vowed to steal all their land without compensation. I mean, some of these people have been there for 15, 18 generations farming the same land in areas where a black person never set foot, for 300 years after these farms were developed. So the Home Affairs Minister in Australia recognized what's happening down there, and he said, why don't we let these people into our country, and they need protection from a civilized country, and so we should consider ways to bring them into our country. They would fit in very well here. They're Christian, Western-minded peoples who would work hard and contribute to our country. And the South African government obviously flipped out and said, oh, you guys must all be racist. Australia is a racist country. How dare you point out the obvious? And, so that's where they're at now. The South African government is demanding a retraction. The foreign minister for South Africa is trying to, downplay the concerns. And they're like, yeah, well, we're really concerned about the land theft, but we're not making any special provisions for Afrikaner farmers. They can apply for refugee status just like anybody else can. But, it's a tough situation that they're in right now, and a lot of them are going to refuse. They're not going to be willing to leave their country as refugees. They're going to stay right there on their land, and if it means, being slaughtered, I think a lot of people will accept that. But, it's a tough situation for them to be in.
Well, I know that in South Africa that you can't just – this was actually when the white government was – the Boer government were in power, that you can't just leave. You can't take anything when you leave. You have to leave all your wealth there. You can only take out, a small amount of money. So I imagine that's still the case. I'm sure that these farmers would say, take what funds we have and what property we, tangible things. But they can't do that. So they'd basically be destitute. They'd be going to these countries with very little money.
Oh, they will be. Absolutely. I mean, the government, they cannot sell their farms at this point with the threat of expropriation without compensation hanging. I mean, nobody would buy one of these farms. You'd have to have rocks in your head to buy a farm that's going to be expropriated the next day without compensation. So, it's basically if they leave, they will leave with nothing. I mean, they might be able to sell their personal belongings, and, maybe if they're lucky enough to have a truck on their farm, they can maybe sell that. But, they are going to be leaving there destitute, and, I think we're getting ready to see a tragedy of epic proportions. I mean, millions of people with no place to go. It's sad beyond belief.
So right now, what is roughly the Boer population?
Well, the Boers, it always gets so complicated, and depending on who you talk to, they'll give you different answers, who's an Afrikaner, who's not an Afrikaner. I just had this discussion with a number of South Africans. They say, well, the Western Cape is mostly Afrikaners, and then they say, oh, no, those aren't Afrikaners because they have brown skin, and they speak Afrikaans, and they're Christians, but they're not proper Africans. So, depending on who you talk to, you'll get different numbers, but Boers are technically, it means farmer, so who you ask, if the entire Afrikaner population is considered as Boers, we're talking about 5 million, maybe 6 million, but at least 1 or 2 million of those have already left the country. It's difficult to find hard numbers. And so, there's probably about 3 million left within South Africa, maybe a little bit more, but nobody has an exact count. About 500,000 of those now live in squatter camps. They're completely destitute. They can't feed themselves. The government has made it illegal for them to work or for them to own a business. So, you know, they're backed into a corner now. They have nothing left for the government to steal. They wouldn't even have money to buy a plane ticket if they had some place to go. And, you know, it's just crazy how.
In the United States, of course, they're making no effort to help any of these people. You know, what type of private organizations are there working, you know, offhand?
Well, the government has actually tried to make it illegal for charities to support these, you know, these squatter camps with white people, and they've made it illegal for companies to try to, you know, donate supplies to these people. So, you know, there's very little in the way of assistance except for informal assistance, you know, farmers, you know, taking them extra crops and whatever. But there are a number of organizations around the world now working in different areas to try to, you know, draw attention to this crisis, to try to get support for them. In fact, I talked to a high-profile U.S. conservative who can't be named at the moment, who's working on what I consider an innovative idea to try to rescue some of these people and get them out and, you know, set them up farming somewhere in the West where, you know, they would be valued and they would be safe with their families. I can't say more at this time, but I'm hoping that, you know, that will materialize. And then there is another organization, the Afrikaner Society, which has recently renamed itself Cape Exit, which is working to have the Western Cape secede from the South African national government. And so by Western Cape, I mean more than just the province of the Western Cape. You'd also include the Northern Cape and parts of the Eastern Cape. And what they argue is that Afrikaners make up a solid majority of the people in this area of the country, you know, Christian, Western-minded, you know, Afrikaans-speaking, people whose mother tongue is Afrikaans. And, you know, that would include people who used to be classified as colored by the apartheid regime, as well as white people. And they do make up a solid majority there in the Western Cape. And, you know, so there's an effort now to have independence declared there. Of course, the South African government is not going to accept that. But that may be, you know, the last hope for a lot of these people. So,
and the other issue, too, is that when these skilled farmers are no longer farming, well, and the folks who are running taking over the farms have no experience, there's going to be starvation of the blacks as well.
Absolutely, there is. Exactly the same as what we saw in Zimbabwe. You know, Zimbabwe went from being known as the breadbasket of Africa to being the basket case, right? I mean, they literally cannot feed themselves anymore. They now depend on the United Nations and donations just to feed the population.
Oh, just Alex, just yes, we're taping a show here, so if you don't mind, thank you. Yeah. So, Alex, we only got about another minute and a half. Where could people get hold of your article or articles on this subject?
Go to thenewamerican.com for the latest ones. I've also written very extensively on this and at other publications. I've got a good number of articles over at WorldNet Daily, and I've done some videos on this. I've done a lot of radio interviews that are posted online, including an hour I did with Michael Savage on the subject of South Africa a few years ago. So if people just type into Google, you know, Alex Newman, South Africa, you'll find a lot of stuff. And I hope people will, because this is basically our future if we don't, you know, pay attention and try to stop this. So,
and has the Trump administration weighed in on this? Do you know?
Not so far. In fact, the other 6 months ago or so, there was U.S. troops in South Africa training South African military. But there is a person who works in the Trump administration who I know personally, who works on Africa issues, and I put them in touch with some of the people on the South African side, and we're hoping that, you know, something will happen. But you can only imagine how the media would react, right? They say, oh, my goodness, look at Trump, the racist. He doesn't want Somalians to come here, or Muslims, but he wants all these white racist Afrikaner Christians to come. Oh, my goodness. And so it would be a big political gamble for him.
Alex, before I let you go, there was back in the early 60s, there was the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace did a study on the invasion of South Africa. And are you familiar with that?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I'd look into it. They actually got down to how many people would be killed and all of the factors. And this, of course, this is an organization that's supposed to be for peace, but they were actually promoting, if they couldn't get it politically, then it'd be a military conquest. So anyway, thanks, Alex.
Goodness.
Thanks very much for being on. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff.
And until next week, may God bless you.